Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Hi, this is Alan Chartok. Welcome to the Capital Connection. Joining us today is Casey Seiler, the state editor and columnist for the Albany Times-Union and co-host of New York Now on public television, WMHT. Seiler's reporting also appears on the Times-Union's Capital Confidential blog. Casey Seiler, always a man to make sense out of complicated state politics. Thanks for being with us.
Alan, great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I guess I'm going to ask you in rapid fire all the things that we all want to know.
A lightning round.
Let me start by saying, how's Andrew Cuomo doing?
It's a tough year for Andrew Cuomo. You know, I would say the summertime is always good, and of course fall is always good because the legislature isn't around.
Lock up the children in the silverware.
Exactly. Yes. Especially this year. You know, with all the various federal indictments. But the second half of the year, the governor is really kind of the center of attention, especially when it's not a campaign year, which
sure.
It isn't. Which it isn't this year, except of course for the New York City races. And that said, this has been a challenging year. The governor did not have many of the sticks that he has used before, and he didn't have quite as many carrots either. That said, the legislative session ended with the governor getting many of the things he wanted, with kind of the notable exception, very notable exception of exceptions of any significant changes or responses to this wave of ethical scandals. The governor threw up, sort of a package of bills meant to deal with campaign finance reform, tightening disclosure, and increasing penalties and making it easier for district attorneys to bring public corruption cases. The legislature, through a variety of, you know, excuses, kind of didn't take up
any of those. I'm shocked that they don't want to be prosecuted.
Yeah, right, exactly. So in response, of course, as we've discussed before, the governor has appointed an investigative panel under the century-old Moreland Act to broadly investigate public corruption. But also the other kind of big fail for the governor was the women's equality agenda,
sure,
which, of course, was this 10-point package of bills, a 10-point agenda that came by the end of the session in two packages, an omnibus 10-point bill that was passed by the Assembly dealing with things like gender pay equity, accommodation of pregnant employees, women in the workplace, human trafficking, domestic abuse, and the most controversial element, a measure that would have, as its supporters put it, would have codified and modernized state abortion law, and as anti-abortion groups put it, would have vastly expanded, you know, the amount
true,
of,
by the way,
of course, you can take this argument either way. It is clear that federal law, basically the big argument is, and in fact, the Senate Republican spokeswoman Kelly Cummings put out in a statement yesterday in response to this kind of latest skirmish over the abortion plank that the legislation would have opened New York up to the abuses of Kermit Gosnell, who was, of course, this Philadelphia abortion doctor who was running what sounds like a chamber of horrors, you know, doing
sure,
kind of, you know, hideous abuses, the worst kind of caricature of what anti-abortion groups would like people to perceive goes on in abortion clinics. But it's clear that Gosnell was operating far beyond the statutory bounds of what goes on.
But they want to make him the face.
They
want to
make him. Yes, exactly. Absolutely. He is sort of, he's become the poster child for anti-abortion groups. Now, this legislation clearly would not have, opened up the state to any kind of Gosnell type abuses. Basically, what it would have done is sort of subtly expanded the allowance for abortion to protect a woman's health in addition to her life further into a pregnancy than previously allowed.
So just to finish up on this, and there are many roads we can go down, but there were 10 components to this women's equality thing.
Yeah.
The controversial one was the abortion one. The Senate goes ahead and they pass the other nine.
Right. Yeah, when we say controversial, it's controversial in the Senate, where Dean Skelos, the Republican leader, who of course runs the chamber with help from the independent Democratic conference run by Jeff Klein, Skelos said that abortion plank is not getting out. So if you want the women's agenda to be passed, you're going to have to crack that off. You're going to have to crack it up into 10 component bills, which very late in the session, just I think 4 days before the legislature closed down, the governor and the women's coalition of hundreds of groups and individuals that had been formed to pass the agenda agreed was a strategic move that they would do. So they broke it up into 10 bills. But the assembly, only 48 hours after that happened, said, no, we're going to pass the omnibus bill, including the abortion plank. It's what women need. So with great fanfare and great pride, and the women's group showed up and they were very happy with it. On Thursday, they passed it. On Friday, I think this is, we're talking about the third week in June now, the Senate began to take up the a la carte bills, as I like to put it, of course, not including the abortion plank. All of the nine bills passed easily, I think, with most of them unanimously. And then the abortion portion was the subject of an effort by the aforementioned Jeff Klein of the Independent Democratic Conference to
sometimes
put it
known
in,
as the traitors. These are the guys who used to be Democrats.
That's an editorial term.
You know, well, you could call it anything, but I'm just saying some people call them the traitors.
Yeah, oh, but Democrats certainly would probably characterize them as such, but or mainline Democrats, I should say. Jeff Klein attempted to include the abortion plank as a hostile amendment mid sort of late in the afternoon on that Friday to an otherwise innocuous sort of medical bill. That effort failed on sort of a procedural vote. In other words, it was determined to be not germane by a vote of the body. Now, women's groups would like to cast that, or some women's groups would like to cast that vote as essentially a vote on choice. If you voted in that against the measure, but Republicans, of course, are able to say, oh, no, it was just a procedural vote.
Yeah, sure.
I wasn't voting against a woman's right to have an abortion. Come on.
Yeah.
And but, of course, you will now see groups like NARAL Pro-Choice, which has broken off from the Women's Coalition, hammering the Senate. They will no doubt, as we come into the elections next year, claim that, oh, no, that was they voted against a woman's right to choose.
Okay, Casey, but the Republicans in the state Senate are between a rock and a hard place, it seems to me. On the one hand, they don't want more primaries in which more conservative people than they take them on and win.
Right. And this is, absolutely. And this is all happening. What Senate Republicans are afraid of is a reprise of what happened to the Republicans who voted for same-sex marriage 2 years ago, once again on the eve of the end of session, where people like Steve Saland and Roy McDonald here in the Capital Region ended up getting hammered from the right by more conservative candidates who ended up, in the case of Kathy Marchione, who ran against Roy McDonald, ultimately prevailing against him in the primary and winning that race. Or in the case of Saland, he ended up winning the primary, but then got a kind of kamikaze, you know, hit in the general election that ended up splitting the Republican conservative vote, allowing the Democrat to step in and win.
So the last thing these guys want, Casey Siler, is to have that replicated. And they looked at the governor, who I think was stronger a year ago, and look him in the eye, and they say to him, hell no, we went along with you on the gun thing, and look what happened, and now we're not going to go along with you on the abortion thing.
Right, yeah, the SAFE Act, you're right, you're absolutely right. This is happening in a post-SAFE Act, of course, the gun control law that was passed at the very beginning of session.
But, Casey, isn't this the governor's fault? I'm saying this in that if he had, as he promised in his campaign, said, I mean, this is tough to go into all of this, but if he had kept his word and said, I will veto any apportionment law that is not done by an outside, honest, trying group, if he had done that, you'd have a Democratic.
You're talking about redistricting.
That's
now.
Right.
Yeah.
You'd have a Democratic Senate right now. I think there's a very good chance you would.
There is certainly a greater chance that you would have it, yes. But the governor, as he pointed out, and once again we're talking about kind of something of a cave on the, or what many, certainly in the Democratic conference, would, at least in the Senate, would describe as a cave by the governor to allow what was seen by many good government groups as a kind of watered-down reform of the redistricting process to go ahead in the spring in March of 2012. Now, the governor got a lot of goodies on the other side for that. In return, yes, exactly.
For not keeping his word.
Well, for, yes, or for achieving grand compromise. You know, you can kind of cast it either way.
This whole thing is such incredible theater that people, yeah. You said before that they did it, an amendment, and that claiming the amendment wasn't really anti-abortion. And yet most people don't understand all the theater.
Well, it's great theater. But then again, here's the argument that I would say the governor could make. The governor could say, look at the other 9 points of the women's equality agenda that were passed by the Senate. And I've got to skip ahead and note that the bottom line here is that because the Assembly passed the omnibus version of the bill.
Yeah, all 10 points.
All 10 points. Mm-hmm. And the Senate passed the 9, including, as noted, laws on human trafficking and income inequality and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But because they did not pass it in the same form, nothing is going to the governor's desk. Now, what the governor says is, don't worry, the Assembly is not going to let the year run out, which of course would be when these bills would become null and void. Yeah. The Assembly isn't going to let the year run out without coming back and passing the other 9 and leaving abortion, noting that there are apparently not 32 votes, which is what you need in the Senate to get anything passed, for the abortion plank, that will walk away with achievement on these other 9 issues. And what the governor would say is that it was the specter of the abortion plank that, the specter of voting down or rejecting the abortion plank that forced Republicans in the Senate to go ahead with
passing
the other 9, including things that had kind of lain fallow in the Senate for years and years and years, even after a kind of Assembly action, that you threaten them. You know, that's the stick. That's what we were holding up. And they ended up going along with these other 9, as the governor has said, one of his favorite adjectives, historic progress.
So let me ask you a question, Casey Seiler. You're one of the brightest guys around. I love having you on the show here. You know, you host your own show on public television. I wanted to ask you this. In the end, does the governor want Republicans to control the Senate or not, in your opinion? It's a tough question.
I think what the governor wants is a functional state Senate, just like he wants a functional Assembly. But of course, the Democratic majority is so huge in the Assembly that, things run pretty smoothly under a very strong, you can criticize, of
but
course,
we
the
remember
strong
what
system.
The, what the Senate Democrats did.
Yeah, exactly. In 2009 and 2010, the Senate was kind of plunged into, you can't even say sort of periodic chaos. It was almost, you needed all 32. Democrats had a very narrow, couldn't get any narrow 32-member majority, which meant that they had to have all hands on deck to pass anything, even the most simple bills.
And then you got blackmail and yelling at each other.
Exactly.
And you make me a leader or I'm out. And,
it empowered, as you put it, kind of blackmail artists and terrorists and, people who are going to kind of sit on their hands and do nothing. The famous, the Four Amigos, including, the ultimate failure is evidenced in the election of Pedro Espada Jr., now heading to prison, as the Democratic majority leader. And of course they claimed, it was just title only, but still, that if that doesn't make you feel cynical about politics, I don't know what does.
And about the Democrats, who've sometimes been seen as a circular firing squad.
Without a doubt. Yeah. And so that is why, and what Senate Democrats would say is, a lot of those bad actors are gone. Some due to federal, U.S. attorneys' action. Some due to the ballot. Espada was kind of tossed out by voters in a primary, but there are still a lot of those people are still around, including 2 people, Malcolm Smith and John Sampson,
under indictment,
who are under indictment on public corruption charges.
Yeah.
And if Democrats were in control, at least one of those 2. U.S. attorney interested elected officials would be needed to pass anything. And that, of course, is a recipe for big trouble.
You know, Casey, I'm old now. I hate to say it, and I've been around for a long time. I was around when the Democrats won, I guess, 63-64, won the Senate, and then couldn't agree on who the leaders were going to be. They were the same then as they are now. It's really very disappointing. Hey, we're going to the lightning round now, and
okay.
I'm going to ask you questions real fast, and you tell me. Jay Cope, the governor, set it up. He said this is a commission that was supposed to be reform ethics in New York State. He was everybody under one commission for the first time. Governor trumpeted as a great achievement. Turns out not to be so.
Well, once again, that is a matter. It's a matter of opinion. They've certainly had their ups and downs as an organization. In recent weeks, it's been a little bit more up than down, simply because the report on the Vito Lopez scandal was seen as being a kind of marginal
big
win for
deal.
Them.
So one guy, the Gropez, as we say, mm-hmm. shouldn't have done that. What, do they get a lot of credit for that? I mean, it was so obvious.
You're right. It's almost like shooting a shotgun at the side of a barn when it comes to
but,
Vito
but
Lopez.
Now, but now, Pat Bilgaro, who is immensely respected in mm-hmm. New York State, former budget guy and everything else, resigns. Do we know why?
No. No, we don't. I mean, we can
speculate.
He was
a silver appointee, right?
That's right. He was one of the legislative appointees. He was Sheldon Silver's pick. And, you know, you can speculate about the kind of pressure and the difficulty that that Sheldon Silver's pick on Jay Cope might have faced over the course of the last several months, considering how much the Lopez scandal kind of enveloped and challenged Jay Cope over the course of the last. You got to remember, it's been a year now, almost a year since the Lopez scandal came to light at the end of August. And you know, if you were Pat Bilgaro, I mean, would you want to sign
no.
on? It's actually, and it's something that the Lopez scandal is now behind us to a certain extent.
Yes.
And I promised my wife I was never going to use that phrase on the show again.
Which is?
To a certain extent. The first time I came on the show, I used it like a dozen times, and my wife called me out on it, and it was terrible.
Our wives are our greatest critics. There is no question about it, and that includes me. So you just mentioned Sheldon Silver. There were right-wing conservative columnists for tabloids who were saying, he's going to disappear. He's mm-hmm. over. He's history. Is that true?
It remains to be seen, but at this point, you are not seeing any kind of concerted effort by his conference to oust him.
I said so in the beginning. I said he's not going anywhere.
Right. Yeah. He is definitely. He is from everything I've seen, from everything I've read, from everything I've heard.
The women in his conference are saying we like him.
Yeah, and the women in his conference who stood behind him after the passage of the omnibus women's equality agenda were fiercely proud of it. And then when women's groups came to them and said, "We need you to stick around after the Senate passed the nine, we want those nine passed." The women said, no, we're perfectly happy with having passed the omnibus agenda. And Speaker Silver said, I'm standing with the women in my conference. This is what they want. You know, I'm not ruling out coming back and passing the nine. But for now, we're perfectly happy to have done what we've done.
Are we going to have gambling in New York?
Well, we've already got gambling
well,
in New York.
You and I can get in a car and go up to
Saratoga and play VLTs all day long.
Yeah. Are we going to have expanded gambling?
That, of course, depends on the statewide referendum that's coming up in November. There are significant hurdles to that, the biggest one of which is that the mayoral race or the city races will result in most of the votes being put into the ballot box. And downstate, at least for the first 7 years of the gambling expansion blueprint that the governor just signed on Wednesday, don't really have a kind of horse to back or to borrow another gambling metaphor, because downstate won't get any resort casinos under this expansion for at least 7 years. Upstate will get them all.
Do New Yorkers want gambling? Do you have any pulse on this at all?
New Yorkers statewide?
Yes.
It depends on the community. You know, it's a
well,
community
okay, so
by
you
community
just mentioned
thing.
New York City. Will New York City vote for expanded gambling casinos?
I don't know. I mean, polls kind of put it all over the map. I think that New Yorkers will say, gosh, we have casino gambling in pretty much every state expanded. We've got a lot of casinos in every state that borders us. But I think a lot of people are concerned about the expansion of gambling in the state. They don't necessarily see it as something that's going to turn their community. If you had a casino in your town, you might not like it very much. We didn't see a lot of hue and cry when OTB failed in New York City. Liz Krueger, who's a senator,
Krueger, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the good Krueger, exactly, with an E. When she had a chance to kind of bail out and save New York City OTB, she said, you know what, the people in my district, she's sort of a Manhattan Democrat, sure, they don't really like to having OTB facilities in there. And, you know, casinos are going to be great big. But then again, they can generate a huge amount of revenue for the state. So hey, it depends on how much effort the governor is going to put in to kind of selling it.
Casey, we only have a few more minutes. So here we go. Wiener.
The one word.
Yeah. Wiener. Does he go? Does he stay in the mayoral race?
I mean, you're hearing, I can't imagine how he can prevail or even hang on. It really makes you wonder if this is kind of a form of therapy, but the damage that it's doing, added damage that it's doing to his reputation, to his family, because now you're seeing his wife, Huma Abedin, getting criticized as well for kind of standing by him.
You do. I'm going to tell you what, right now, he can't afford to get out. He cannot, because if he gets out, he's done forever in politics. If he stays in, he may think, well, at least I saw it through.
Oh, but he's got a kid now. And with every day he continues to stay in, it means that the family name is going to be, stands a greater chance of becoming even more of a punchline than it is now.
Becomes a verb.
Exactly.
Spitzer. Elliot Spitzer, a man I much admire. I wanted to ask you whether or not the signs that his old enemies, the guys on the street and others, are putting together a fierce war chest to kill him. I say that actually helps him. What do you think?
It helps him in sort of a kind of a talking point sort of way. In other words, he can come out and say Wall Street is against me. But you have to remember there are other members of this coalition that is forming to go after him, including unions. OK, well, some people like unions, some people don't like unions. Mm-hmm. Nobody or very few people like Wall Street, except, of course, for people who make money on Wall Street, I would say. But also women's groups are coming out against Spitzer as well. And that is a harder adversary for him to kind of joust against.
They want to close some upstate prisons. You have a huge, talking about unions, you have people say, we can't afford to do it, it will undermine criminal justice. But really, those unions are about jobs, aren't they?
Yeah, and exactly, that many upstate communities kind of count on these facilities. And it's not just prisons. Prisons is the one we hear the most about. But also there were closures announced the exact same day on Friday of, I believe, the same number, I think it was four, of institutional facilities for the disabled. And in the case of prisons, it's an effort to respond to a drop. You know, changes in our laws, including the Rockefeller drug laws, have created a smaller population of prisoners. And this is seen as kind of right-sizing prisons. And in the case of the facilities for the disabled, it's the process of deinstitutionalization that began kind of with the Meadowbrook scandal in the mid-70s and continues to this day. New York still has a much larger number of large facilities for the disabled than other states do.
Well, Casey Siler, we love having you here. You are a terrific guy. You are the brightest of the bright. And it's just great. We had 1,000 more questions we could ask you, but we'll save them for the next time. Again, thank you so much for being with us. Our guest has been Casey Siler, state editor for the Albany Times Union. You can follow Siler's reporting at the Capital Confidential blog. Thank you, Casey, for being with us.
Alan, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign. Online at nyscasa.org.